morning once again. My name is Sten. I'm the pastor here at Midcurrent Church, and we are in week number 5 of a series called Detox, where the single goal is to get rid of the toxic things in our lives that are holding us back from some of the things that I think that God really wants for us, some of the things that God wants to do in us, God wants to do around us. We want to get rid of some toxic things in us that are holding us back from all of that. It's been a really great series. If you have missed any of it, we'd love for you to jump onto our website, catch up on them, even subscribe to the Midcurrent podcast on iTunes to catch up on these. I think you'll be really glad that you did, and I think you'll be really glad that you're here this morning. So we'll go ahead and get right into this here. For those of you that were teenagers in about the 90s, or maybe even for those of you who had teenagers, you know, if you're parents of teenagers in the 90s, who can tell me, just yell out loud if you know, who can tell me what these are here on the screens? Pogs! Right, just really quickly here, hands up real nice and high, real proud. How many of you had Pogs, played Pogs, had kids that played Pogs? Okay, there's some hands going up here. For those of you who missed out on these little beauties here, Pogs, this is all they were. The Pogs were these like thin little cardboard discs that for some reason were like really, really, really cool and popular, you know, some like 20 years ago or so. You'd collect these things, and then when you played Pogs, you and your opponent, you kind of go one-on-one, you and your opponent would each put in an equal number of Pogs, your own Pogs, you put an equal number into the middle, into the same stack, and then you'd you know, put them all face down, and then you'd take turns throwing down what you called the slammer, right? I'm bringing back some memories for some of you here. You'd take turns throwing down the slammer on top of those things, and whichever Pogs flipped over so that the design was up top, you won those Pogs, right? You got to add them to your collection. It's a no-brainer why this was so popular, right? This sounds so, so fun, Pogs. Okay, me and my friends were crazy about Pogs. We would save up. We'd go to the local, they sold them at the local baseball card shop, and so we'd save up all our money to just go buy sleeves of these Pogs, and we played all the time. But interestingly enough, though, I don't know if this is the case for everybody, equally as exciting for us as playing Pogs, as doing the whole slammer deal, equally exciting for us was trading Pogs. Right? I don't know if this is how everybody did their thing, but we got just as excited about trading Pogs, right? They all had different designs on the top. That's what I'm talking about here. So you could, you know, if your friend or you're someone you knew had like some designs, had some Pogs that you wanted. Maybe they had a slammer that you wanted, like the big heavy metal ones that were gold or silver. Right? If they had some Pogs that you wanted, you could try to orchestrate a trade for these things. But here's the thing. Again, this was just us. But me and my friends, we had to be very, very, very careful, because our older brothers, who also played Pogs, right, our older brothers could trick us into agreeing to trades that were really just not that fair, right? Anyone else looking in on these would have recognized, like, dude, don't do that. I mean, well, this is such a bad trade, right, that you're giving away way too many, or that that one's like too nice, right? You can't do that, right? But somehow we'd think, like, hey, this looks good, and we'd fall for it, right? And eventually we'd realize, ah, man, I think we just got duped, right, to like giving away our best ones or giving away too many. And when the dust settled, when the reality set in for us, there was always, it was just a sinking feeling, right? There's nothing worse than realizing that we were, you know, on the wrong end of this deal. There was nothing worse than realizing we had just made a pretty bad trade when it came to these Pogs. Here's the question that I want to ask you this morning. Have you ever been on the really bad end of a trade? You ever made a really bad trade before? I mean, it stinks, right? That there really is nothing worse. There's such an unsettling feeling when you realize, I think I got ripped off. I think I'm on the wrong end of this deal, right? And in real life, right, far beyond the world of Pogs, far beyond the world of you know like trading baseball cards, which we did too, right? In our real life, far beyond these things, I think, right, that we work pretty hard to make sure this doesn't happen. We work pretty hard. We're pretty careful to make sure that we don't end up on the wrong end of a trade. Nobody wants to be on the wrong end of a trade. Nobody wants to be on the wrong end of some kind of exchange and to make a bad trade in life. right? Or in business and in finances and stocks and in relationships. Nobody wants to be on the wrong end of a trade. Think about this, right? Where do most people sell their cars today, right? On Craigslist. Whether it's true or not, people seem to think that they can get more money for their cars if they, you know, sell it themselves rather than the trade-in at the dealership, right? You know how this works. You've got a buddy who just bought a new car, and you ask him, hey, what are you doing with the old one? And typically he says, well, I'm just going to sell it by myself because the dealership was only going to give me $1,500, right? You got to watch out. You got to work really hard not to make a bad trade. Same is true in the world of sports. You may know that I love sports, reading about sports, all the news, all the rumors, all the trades, right? And teams are always making and also being graded on, right? This is the thing, right? We work hard to avoid bad trades. Teams are always being graded on the trades that they make and the players that they trade away. Whenever there's a big blockbuster trade, which is actually like happening right now if you watch in the NBA, whenever there's big trades and big names and players swapping, ESPN always publishes articles, right, grading each team on how they came out in this trade. Oh, you know, the A-minus, right, they got some great players, they didn't give up a whole lot. Another team, B, this team, D-minus, right? Article just slams them, like, well, what were they thinking? Such a horrible trade, and their fans go nuts, and everybody's all upset because this was such a horrible, horrible trade. Okay, here's one more that really gets me, this kind of trade or kind of an exchange here. It's the babysitting swap. You ever do these, right, with people you know? We often trade babysitting with Erica's sister and her two kids. And so we'll have a date on the calendar where we're supposed to watch my niece and nephew, and I'll make some offhanded comment to my wife about like, okay, yeah, I think that works out. I think it's our turn. And she, you know, she'll say something like, oh, I don't know, I wasn't really, you know, paying attention. I'm like, what do you mean you ain't not paying attention? I'm like, I'm not ending up on the wrong end of that trade. You better believe that I was keeping track, right? We think about these things. Okay, now I'm just hoping that my in-laws aren't listening to this or our free days of babysitting are are really over if they catch this podcast. Okay, here's the deal. No matter when it is, no matter where it is, no matter how it shakes out, I think the truth of the matter in insignificant places in our lives and in very significant places in our life, nobody wants to end up on the bad end of a trade. Like I said, nobody wants to end up on the bad end of a trade or make a bad trade in life and in finances and business and relationships and marriage and family and work. Nobody wants to end up making a bad trade. And yet, right, and here's what I really want to talk about this morning. Here's really what I want to get at, right? Most of us, I'm almost willing to say, if I can, I'm almost willing to say all of us. I think I could say that. Most of us for sure, but I'm almost willing to say all of us, without even realizing it sometimes, time and time again, end up making one of the most toxic trades that we could ever make. Right? We trade something so good for something so toxic. Right, we trade something so sure for something so uncertain. We trade something that we can count on for something that does not offer us a single guarantee. And we do it all the time. And this morning, I want us to see what that trade is. I want us to see what kind of toxic trade that we make so often in our lives, sometimes without even realizing it. We get a glimpse of this trade in the New Testament book of Romans. The first century church leader and first ever church planter, a guy by the name of Paul, he's writing a letter to the church in Rome, which is a new forming Christian community of like former Jews, God's original people, and Gentiles, right? They were like nobody's people, right? But they're kind of coming together, right? That they've now, you know, both put their faith in Jesus Christ. So this new community is coming together. And with Paul's help, with his guidance, with his leadership, they're learning what this looks like, how this all works. They're learning what to watch for and how to align best with God's purposes. And so in the first chapter of this letter that he's writing to them, Paul, he's actually writing to them in the first chapter, honestly, about how God is saddened, or if we can be honest, about how God is even angered when people turn to a life other than the one that God had called them to live. And so it's in this context, right, of God being sad and God being angered when people do this. It's in this context that Paul writes about this unfortunate trade that so many of us make all the time. So here's what's going to happen. We're going to start back at verse 21, and we're going to pick up a little bit of speed as we move forward to reading about this toxic trade that we make. Paul begins writing in verse 21. He says this, yes, they knew God. right? He's talking about, you know, people who are kind of turning from God at times. He says, yes, they knew God, but they wouldn't worship him as God or even give him thanks, right? Same is true for us in a lot of ways. Yeah, we know God. We're kind of like, yeah, amen for this thing, right? But he said they didn't worship God. They didn't even give him thanks. And they began to think up, he goes on, they began to think up foolish ideas of what God was like. And as a result, their minds became dark and confused. Verse 22, he says, claiming to be wise, they instead became utter fools. And instead of worshiping their glorious, ever-living God, they worshiped idols made to look like mere people and birds and animals and reptiles, right? So instead of this, they worship this. Instead of worshiping and giving thanks to a glorious and an everlasting and a never-failing God, they worshiped and they gave themselves over to temporary and man-made, right, kind of hand-created statues that looked like a person or some kind of like strange looking reptile, okay? These little gold statues, as it's written here, these little statues were called idols. And what these idols did is they occupied a place in people's lives that was only meant for God, okay? Now, before we keep reading here, before we get on to this trade that we make, let me just acknowledge something. You might be sitting here going, okay, Sten, now you kind of lost me. Ain't nobody in Hudson or River Falls or New Richmond or Baldwin, ain't nobody worshiping little statues that look like an iguana or a parrot or something, right? That's not happening today. Nobody's worshiping images or little figurines like this. I believe you, okay? And I agree with you, right? None of us worship things like this, but here's the deal. We all are prone to worship something. We all are prone to put something else, it doesn't have to be a gold statue, but we all are prone to put something else in the place that God alone deserves. And that's all an idol is, something that takes God's place. And that idol may be something evil in and of itself, but more often than that, might be something evil in and of itself, but more often than that, right, the devil is far more deceptive, right? More often, the devil is using something that's perfectly good, a perfectly good or innocent pleasure to lure us from wholehearted devotion and dependence on God, okay? So no, it might not be a gold statue of some kind of funky-looking animal, but it very well might be a gold-colored iPhone or iPad. It might be the newest toy or the newest car. It might be the largest screen or the biggest home or the warmest vacation, right, that you are devoted to and that you give the best of your time and attention to, okay? And now before you really, like, tune me out, before you cross your arms and say, let me be absolutely clear about something. Nobody ever said, and I'm not saying, that's not what this morning is about. Nobody ever said that it is wrong to own or to have nice things. Nobody said it's wrong to own or to have nice things, but it is wrong to let those things own you, okay? No, it's not wrong to have nice things, but it is wrong to let those things have you, to let those things call your next shot, to let those things force your hand, to dictate your next move. It is wrong and it is dangerous because the truth is those things, those idols that they cannot provide what they promise to deliver, okay? So this is all kind of at the heart of this message here and what Paul says next. Okay, this is all just some background. This is all just kind of lurking behind the scenes here. It's the backdrop behind what's happening behind this toxic trade that we make. So here's the trade itself. We'll skip down to verse 25, continuing on from this talk about idols, right? And these people choosing to worship idols instead of worshiping God. Continuing on this talk from idols, Paul goes on to explain what exactly is happening then in those situations. Here's what he explains. He says this, they traded the truth about God for a lie. And so often we do the same thing. He says, they traded the truth about God for a lie. So what does that look like? He says, and so they worshiped and they served, get this, they worshiped and they served the things that God created instead of the Creator himself. They worshiped the things that God created instead of the Creator himself, who is worthy of eternal praise, right? It's a trade, truth for a lie, right? The Creator for the things that are created. That's the trade that I think we make so often in our lives without even realizing it. We trade God's truth and its power to liberate and its power to truly and eternally satisfy our souls for the promise of material things, for the promise of created things. And here's what makes this such a bad trade. Okay? I'm going on record saying I think this is one of the most toxic trades we could ever make. Here's why I think this is such a bad trade, because I think we end up losing out in the end, right? We're trading a sure thing for a short-lived thing, right? We're trading God's eternal blessings for temporary and for passing ones. We're making short-term decisions that have long-term consequences, and we're living in the moment only and forgetting about the future, right? And we're getting ourselves, at times, we're getting ourselves in all sorts of trouble in doing so. It really is the worst trade we could ever make, right? Devotion to created things rather than to things, rather than to the creator of things himself. Horrible trade that we could make. The question is why? Why would Christians, why would non-Christians, really, because this is kind of just a humanity thing. The question is, why would we make such a bad trade? Why would we be willing to make such a short-sighted trade? And I think the reason is simple. It's the false promises that we get sucked into. It's the false promises, and it's the luxurious lies of money and materialism, right? It's a lie, right? Interestingly here, the Greek word in this verse, the Greek word lie is the word pseudomai. And here's what it means. It means a conscious, this is fun for me to like get the background information here. It means it's a conscious or intentional falsehood. Or in a more general sense, it means whatever is not what it seems to be. And so here's the deal, right? Money and material things are not what they seem to be. In and of themselves, I want to be very clear here, in and of themselves, they are not bad and they are not evil things. Money, things, material. In and of themselves, they are not bad, they are not evil things. They are simply making promises to us that they cannot keep. Promises of happiness, promises of significance, promises of security, none of which they can truly provide. They are not what they seem to be. And so for your good and for my good, here's what I want us to do, right? As we continue in this series, detox, right? I want us to detox from, I want us to work hard to get rid of our dependence on things. Right, notice I'm not saying that, hey, if we're going to follow God, we have to work hard to get rid of things. We can't have things. We can't like things. I'm saying we need to work hard. We need to detox from our dependence on things. We need to work hard to stop believing the lie of materialism, that more things equals more meaning. And here's why it's hard work. Here's why I think this is something that we got to like choose to do. Here's why I think it's hard work. Why this has to be a choice, a conscious decision that we make this year. Here's why. Because I don't think, I'm speaking from my own life, I don't think that we naturally drift toward being content with less. We don't naturally just drift kind of just to be content with kind of whatever is. Our natural pull, right? If we're just kind of, you know, left to just go on our own, our natural pull is toward more, right? Newer, nicer, better, bigger, more. That's just where we kind of naturally lean toward more, nicer, bigger, better. Let me just see if I can give you a quick example from my own life that might help you see how this takes place, okay? Since we started a family, we've always had two cars, one for Erica, my wife, and one for me. I usually, in our later years, I usually just drive, you know, like, you know, cheap old paint peeling cars just to get me around town, right? That's the only place I'm buzzing around town. So I just get some cheap old car. And then our other car for a while was a Honda CR-V. It's the car that I bought in college, and it's been with us ever since. And it's a really great car. I mean, it's still going strong. Man, I love that thing. And typically, that's the car that Erica would drive with the kids. I've got just a car to get me around town, and that car is a good car. It's a family car. that's the one that she drives with the kids. But if we go somewhere together, then we would take the CRV, because that's the family car. And in those cases, when we go somewhere together, I usually drive. That's just how we roll. I would drive. And I kid you not, right? I always felt like a king. When I would go from, when I would go from just the little cars that I was driving into the CRV, I mean, it was just like the ultimate upgrade to go from the small, cramped, loud, like dashboard flashing, key doesn't open the trunk kind of cars. When I went from those cars to the CRV, it was just like the most premium upgrade to be able to be driving this CRV. Yes, it had some minor faults. There was some dents and some dings on it. The windshield had some cracks, but it was a good car. And I can even remember commenting to Erica about how good it would feel to drive. You could just tell the difference, and I'd go from my car to this car. I mean, it just felt so good. It felt so just like strong. It felt so like powerful. It felt so reliable, so safe. And so I love family trips in the CRV. And I literally had this feeling like, man, this car could take us anywhere. Now, fast forward a little bit. Our family is growing. And so the CRV doesn't fit the whole crew anymore, and so we made the giant leap into the world of the minivan. Okay, and trust me, the water's nice over here, folks. I have no shame. Enjoying the land of the minivan, okay? This thing is the best. It's still a little older, to tell you the truth. Eric and I, we're Dave Ramsey people. If you know the financial guy, we only pay cash, buy what we can afford. So it's a little older still, but I'm telling you, this thing is nice, like really nice. It's spacious. It's comfortable. It's roomy. The van doors, they're sliding open on their own. We weren't looking for these features, but it's got like the heated seat warmers. It's got the DVD player. It's got the all digital dashboard. It's got the backup camera that I still don't trust myself to like use on its own. I got to look back still, but I'm telling you, this thing is nice. I love it, and I love driving it, right? When we go somewhere as a family, I get excited because I drive, and so I get to drive the minivan when we're going somewhere together. But unless we're going somewhere all together, it's Erica's car. She drives around her and the kids, which means I inherited, you guys stick with me here, okay? Minivan is hers now, which means I inherited the CRV, my chariot. But you know what happened? I'm not kidding you. You can talk to my wife about this. After a few rides in the new minivan, whenever I got back into the CRV, it's kind of a bummer. I'm not joking. Like, kind of a disappointment. This is so bizarre. The car that just a few weeks prior was like my pride and joy, right, was all of the sudden, not so great. I mean, I'm not, a few weeks before we got this new van, this car used to feel so good. I just felt like, oh, I loved sitting in that thing and taking our family somewhere because it felt so good. But man, how quickly my perspective changed. I get it now and I'm like, man, this thing's getting kind of old, right? The lights behind the dials are burned out. The dashboard has some funny quirks. The cracks in the windshield, like they feel a whole lot larger, right? And on the whole, I look at this car that I used to love. I look at this car in just a matter of weeks with a whole lot less excitement, right? I've even told Erica before, man, I can't believe that we used to like pack into this thing, right? If for some reason, these days, for whatever reason, if the four of us take this car, it feels so cramped, right? And I've literally commented to Erica before, I'm going like, man, how did we ever travel in this thing? Man, how did we ever take a road trip in this piece of garbage car, right? I can't believe it, right? In a matter of weeks, right? What once was so satisfying, all of a sudden became so like, this thing is not that special, okay? All I'm realizing is this. It's when I step back from the situation that I can see how silly this is, right? That I can see what is happening here, which is this, that we don't naturally drift toward just being content with what we have. We don't just naturally drift toward being content with kind of less or just, you know, enough or whatever, right? The natural pull, when we just go with the flow, when we're just kind of doing our thing and kind of, you know, doing what we do and do what everybody does around us, the natural pull is toward more. Bigger is better. Newer is nicer. Money makes the man, and more things will make us more happy. And not only is this a lie, right? I think as Paul is trying to point out here, it's not what it seems, right? It's like an intentional falsehood. Not only is this a lie, but I think it's also a really dangerous way for us to live, right? When we start buying into this way of thinking, that more things make us more happy, so often the result is that this is what I just see, right? It happens to our family too, but here's what happens. The result when we buy into these lies is that we become burdened, we become discouraged by, we become depressed about, we become tied to, we become handcuffed to, and we become held back by a lifestyle that we created. We become prisoners to choices that we have made. Nobody else is to blame when our devotion was to created things that start to call the shots for us. There's nobody else to blame when our devotion was to created things rather than to the creator of all things. But here's my hope here this morning as we continue in this series. My hope is that would not be the case any longer. That we would not continue to make this trade, the truth for a lie, right? That the creator for created things. My hope is that wouldn't be the case any longer as we move further into a new year, into 2019. Hope is that wouldn't be the case, right? And if that's going to happen, if we're going to, you know, really kind of expose in our own lives that the false promises, that's what they are, they're false promises of things they cannot provide. If we're going to expose the false promises of materialism, there's one thing I really want us to know, right? Here's the thing I really want us to know about our stuff, that in and of itself is not bad stuff, but here's the thing I want us to know about our stuff and our things in our life. Jesus made it pretty clear in Luke 12, 15. He says it pretty simply when he says this, that life does not exist in the abundance of possessions. Stuff isn't bad. I'm not telling you if you're trying to follow Jesus, you can't have stuff, you can't have nice stuff, you can't do nice things. We just need to know about our stuff that our life does not exist in the abundance of possessions. So here's what I want us to know today. Here's what I want you to know today, that who you are is not determined by what you have. Life does not exist in the abundance of possessions. So who you are is not determined by what you have. It can be tempting. I get it. I absolutely get it. It can be tempting to believe otherwise, but it is a lie. Simply put, for better or for worse, wherever you find yourself on this spectrum, right? Simply put, you are not what you have. Right? You are not what you drive. You are not what you wear. You are not where you live. Right? And anything that says or promises otherwise is a lie, right? It's not what it seems to be. It might be good in the moment. Might be good for a long moment. Might be good for a while. But it's making a promise that in the end, it cannot keep. And we cannot continue to trade what is true of God and what is true of His promise for us for a lie. And for a promise that things and money and material cannot keep. So let me ask you here this morning, right? What lie, if you think about it, what lie is most alluring to you? Okay, and trust me, this is not like a finger pointing thing, like, you know, what? You can't believe you are doing this, right? This is not a finger pointing thing. It's just to say, man, all of us have some kind of voice in us that's saying, hey, this is what you got to do. This is what you got to be. This is what it's all about, right? This is what you got to have. This is what it's got to look like, right? What lie? If we're just honest, right? That we have those voices. If we're honest, what lie do you find yourself buying into? What lie do you find yourself allured to most? Think about your life. Think about what you do, right? Think about, you know, what you want. Think about what you dream about. Think about what you depend on. Think about what it is that you're chasing after, right? Is there any place where you are trading the best thing in the long run for just a good thing now? Is there any place in your life where you might be trading the best thing in the long run for just a good thing now? Has the promise of material things, created things, lured you away from the place that you want to be? Has the false promise of material things lured you away from the faith that you want to develop, right? From the devotion that you want to display, from the life that you wanted to be living right now? If so, again, this isn't like a finger-pointing thing. This is just a, hey, let's get honest about the things that are inside of us, right? If the answer is yes, then it doesn't have to stay that way any longer. That's my hope for this morning. So if you would, I'm going to finish here. If you would, just close your eyes for a second with me. Imagine the relief that we could experience when we stop believing the lie of materialism. What would it be like if we didn't have to play that game? We think about the life that we're living. Imagine the rest, the legitimate rest, like the sigh of relief that we could experience from stepping off of this treadmill that never stops going, but that never gets us anywhere that we want to be. What would it be like if we didn't have to keep running that hard? What would it be like if we didn't have to measure up anymore? Imagine the freedom, the liberation we could experience when we're not bound to the false promises that money and materialism and marketing make. Imagine the generosity that we could develop if we weren't chasing after the lie of bigger, better, nicer, newer, faster, and more. What impact could we make? What lives could be changed? What communities could be transformed? Imagine this. Imagine the trust and the faith that we could strengthen, that could be developed in us, right? That's what so many of us want, man. I just want my faith to grow. I want, you know, my relationship with God to grow deeper. Imagine the faith and the trust that we could develop when we depend not on created things, but on the creator of things himself. You want to see your faith grow? Put your faith in the creator of all things. See, I think when our coworkers, when our family see this in us, see this kind of attitude in us, right? When they see and notice in us that we don't depend on things, it's not that we don't have things. I want to be really, really clear. That's not what I'm trying to say. This, when people notice in us that we don't depend on things, it's not that we don't have things, but that we just don't need those things. I think people notice. I think people pay attention. I think people are attracted to that. They go, man, how are you so confident? How are you so kind of content? How are you just kind of so good? Just with whatever, just with what you've got, with what you're doing. They want to know. How are you so confident? How are you so content in all of that? I think people notice when they see it in other people. And I think it all comes from an understanding that who you are, who we are, is never determined by what we have. Who we are is completely determined only by what Christ has done for us, right? Who we are is not determined by what we have, but by what Christ has done for us. And when that's our attitude, I think it develops a confidence in us and a faith in us and a contentment in us that people notice, that I want for every single one of us. So here's the deal, right? If you fight hard, and it's a choice, right? It's a decision. If you fight hard against the current, It's always moving. The current of commercialism and materialism, you can start to swim in better waters, right? So stop believing.